Southwest. I bid you all good evening and or good morning, wherever you may be across this great land of ours, from the island of Guam, the Rock out in the Pacific, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole, and worldwide on the Internet. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. Good morning. Well, I've got an awful lot of pretty serious stuff for you this morning. And so what we're going to do is take care of business very quickly and get underway right away. Stay right where you are. All right. This does not come under the category of airing dirty laundry. It comes under the category of telling you the truth, something I'm really big on. And I just don't know any other way to do it, and I cannot, night after night, sit around in answer to questions like, where's Peter Davenport, saying things like, well, he has a standing invitation to come on the program or whatever. I just can't do that. I'm going to tell you exactly why Peter Davenport is not going to be on the program anymore. Peter's been a friend of mine, and I hope remains so, but he's been a friend of mine for a lot of years. Peter and I have gone down a lot of trails together, and so what's going on right now, I'm sorry to see happening, but nevertheless, I think that you should know. You may recall back when I left the air, when I retired almost a year ago now, and when that occurred, Peter was, contacted by the network to continue his appearances with Mike because they thought that that was a very important part of the show. And Peter Davenport responded with the fact that he wanted to be compensated, paid to come on. And I guess maybe here I should stop and I should tell you that as a practice, as an ethical practice, broadcasters don't pay guests. We don't pay guests. And we never have. Guests are exactly that. And if they have a book that they've written, then we allow them to plug their book. If they have a Washington tax-free organization, as Peter Davenport does, then I always ask you to please support him and send donations to the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle. And I'm sure if you've listened for any period of time, you know that. Well, at any rate, as a general ethical policy, broadcasters do not pay guests. Now, Peter was a sort of a sporadic guest. You know, as things would occur, UFOs amassing in one place or another, a flap going on, Peter would report on that in a very contemporary way as it was occurring, and that was a very valuable asset to the program. There's no question about it. I like getting current boom, information, we all do. And so I think he was an incredibly important asset to the program. However, during the period that Mike was on, I guess they talked back and forth, and then there were gaps in that communication, and they talked back and forth, and the network continued to say they would not pay to have a guest appear. And then when I returned, so that goes to answer why you never heard him when Mike was on. Then when I returned to the air on February 5th, I called Peter and said, hey, come on the show. And he said, all right, but this might be my last appearance. And I said, why? And he said, well, I want to be paid. And I said, oh, Peter, we don't do that. You know, we don't pay guests. Nobody, as far as I know, pays guests. Nobody. I think if you go on Carson or something like that, you might get a union wage mandatory thing. But, and that's on TV, but on radio, you just don't pay guests. And there's a good reason for it. Not that Peter would ever do such a thing. And I really mean that. Peter wouldn't do anything like this. But the general ethic comes from the fact that if you pay somebody to come and give you spectacular reports, interesting reports, then obviously getting paid a substantial amount of money, they're going to feel pressure to come up with stuff. And as you know, there have been scandals in the past because broadcasters have done things they should not have done. They've made up stories, things like that. And Peter would never do that. But what I'm saying is that's the reason for the general policy that broadcasters don't pay guests. So Peter came on with me February 5th and said it might be the last time. We talked about it, and I explained to him, gosh, Peter, there's no way. We don't pay guests. And so he came on, and we requested donations, as we always do, for the National UFO Reporting Center in Washington. And Peter told me he received about $2,000 and said that was nowhere near enough. And so, being at a complete impasse, Peter wrote one more request to the network to be paid. And the network responded with one last answer, which is up on the website right now under What's New. It says, regarding Peter Davenport, in fact, Brian in Auburn, New York, wrote to me before the show, Art, I'm a regular listener to your program, and one of my favorite guests has been Peter Davenport. What's going on with this letter from Premier Radio regarding Mr. Davenport? I hope you will shed some light on this confusing situation on tonight's show. I'll be listening. Thanks, Brian in Auburn, New York. So, shedding light is what I am. You know, he's not going to be on anymore, and I'm not going to be part of going on there and saying, well, you know, Peter has a standing invitation to appear on the show, and not telling you what's really going on. I'm just not into that. I never have been, and I never will be. Now, having said all of this, Peter is a very good reporter. He's a very good friend of mine. I'm sorry it's come to this, very sorry that it has come to this impasse. You can read the letter for yourself if you wish, on the website that went back from Premier. So when I do a five-hour program every night, 5 hours, and there's no way that I can come on the air and sort of blow you off when I get a call saying, where's Peter? I had one last night. What's the story on Peter Davenport? Why isn't it more of Peter Davenport? Well, I said, all right, I'm sorry, I'll have something to say about Peter Davenport soon, and I'm just not about to let it go. So, except for now, of course, I've got to let it go. It's over with, and I'm sorry to say that, but that's the way it is. Now, we are going to be looking for somebody else who will, in effect, take Peter Davenport's place, and that's going to be no easy job. Not easy shoes to fill, indeed. It requires somebody with a telephone, answering machine, website, somebody who would be willing to come on the radio it late at night, in the middle of the night sometimes. What Peter did was not an easy job. It was his own decision, of course, to take that job, but it was not an easy job. And for anybody else out there who will do it, it will not be an easy job. It's kind of like doing this. You know, you get messages all the time. You're trying to digest and process information all the time. And it's no easy cakewalk. So we are going to be looking for somebody who will take that job. And when we find that person, we'll appeal, as we did with Peter, for you to support them. And we will get current reports of what's going on out there. And we'll give out that number, or whatever that number turns out to be. So we are in the search for somebody. If you think you are that somebody, let us know. We'll talk about it with you. Now, turning to a couple of more pleasant subjects for me. We've got two things on our website tonight that are just incredible. One is called Ghost Cat. And you may think that you've seen pictures of interesting pictures of ghost cats before. But you've never seen anything like this. This is Kevin York who sent it to us. And what you'll see in the photograph, I'm tempted really not to describe it to you because you ought to see it. It might take your sitting there for a minute and looking at this photograph and discerning really what you're seeing. And so you might not immediately see it or understand the significance of the photograph. You might think it's just Kevin with his cat, but it's much, much more than that. And if you get down and examine the intimate details, though it's a relatively small photograph, you'll get some real surprises. And so I kind of don't want to give it away, I'd kind of like to let you examine it for yourself. It's really neat. It is, without a shadow of a doubt, pun intended, the best cat ghost photograph we have ever received. That's up on the web right now under What's New. In fact, the first three things are relevant to tonight's program. Incidentally, next hour, of course, Gordon Michael Scallion is going to be here. And that's going to be a big... whenever you get Gordon Michael Scallion on the air, it's a big deal. All right. The first item you'll find under What's New right now is an amazing, amazing thing. It's a brand new jet. It's a SU-37 Super Flanker. And that's what would be one of the latest models of this Russian jet. And you have never in your life seen anything like it. It's got pivoting, unique pivoting engines. It's an MPEG file. In other words, this is moving video. You'll hear a Russian speaking in the background. Now, this came to us through military sources. Keith traced the chain of custody of this MPEG. It's a moving video MPEG, so you've got to download it. And it definitely came through military sources, and that's all we're going to say on the subject. It does things aeronautically that no jet plane in the whole world has ever done and probably ever will do, save this particular aircraft, this SU-37. Now, it's almost a 2-meg download, I think. So it's going to take you a little time to download, but boy, it is well worth it. You have never seen anything like this in your life. Matter of fact, we did a pretty extensive web search on this. Some called it a flanker, Fokker. I'm not sure. It's obviously a test Russian aircraft. There have been earlier models of it, but this latest model, it will absolutely, it'll just blow your mind. Jet aircraft just can't do the kinds of things this aircraft is doing. It's a real photograph, and so you make up your own mind about it. As, by the way, you do everything on this show. When I have guests on the radio, that brings to mind something else I want to say. When I have guests on the radio, no matter who they are, I allow, it is my policy, my way of doing radio, that I allow my guests to say whatever it is they want to say. I allow them to develop their story, and if their story is wild, if their story is wild and woolly, well, I don't sit here and browbeat them about it on the air, and I'm never going to. It's not the way I do radio. I assume that all of you out there are adults. And I guess I sort of meet you eye-to-eye level, and I assume you're adults, and you can sit there and say, that guy is full of you-know-what, or you know what, that's outlandish, but it's interesting information, and I buy it, or it's interesting information, and I don't buy it, or it's entertaining, and I don't buy it, or I hate it, and I'm turning this off. You can do whatever you want, but I allow guests, what I do is I feed them enough rope. And if they're really good guests, then they really take the rope for a ride. If they're a really bad guest, then the rope takes them for a ride, if you follow me. You know the old saying, right? So that's the way I do things. I just, it's not meant to be a confrontational kind of program. We have it occasionally, but I try and steer away from it. Sometimes debates are fun. But, you know, for the most part, I like to have a guest on and allow him or her to unwind their own story in a natural kind of way and let you be the judges of what you think is cool and what you think is BS, frankly. So every now and then I want to repeat that so that you all know the way I do things and always have and always will till the moment they yank me out of here, and you never know when that's going to be. I want to repeat briefly a story that I read last night that I think is incredible. It's true. And And it says a lot. And I think yesterday I did not perhaps get to it until the second hour. But Vice President Dick Cheney was taken aback the other day by the first question posed by a caller to Diane Rehm's national talk radio show. The caller asked whether the administration, imagine this as a first call, huh? The caller asked whether the administration has a policy on UFOs. Raising an eyebrow, Cheney, no doubt, made that caller's day by replying that if he had attended such a meeting, it would be classified, and therefore he'd be unable to discuss it. End quote. Can you imagine that? The vice president could have said, no, I don't know anything about UFOs. He didn't say that. He could have said, I've never been to any such meeting. He didn't say that either. What he said was, if I had been to such a meeting, clearly implying, well, maybe I have, I wouldn't be able to discuss it because it would be classified. Now, there's a little bit of a head shaker there, wouldn't you say? I've got so much more, so little time. A group of scientists is seeking now a standardized protocol for dealing with the possibility of an asteroid or comet striking Earth, saying that humans can do more than the dinosaurs ever could before a colossal impact precipitated their extinction 65 million years ago. Yeah, I bet. So they want a protocol for doomsday. Doomsday protocol. And then this. You'll love this. An 18-month-old baby in Malaysia was blown hundreds of yards through the air while in his cradle when a freak windstorm hit the region. The toddler was sleeping in a traditional cloth cradle suspended from the roof beam of his home in the eastern Malaysian state of Sabah when the storm hit. The winds ripped the roof off the home, carrying baby, cradle, and all through the air. The baby was found unconscious in a nearby tree and taken to the hospital, but reportedly did not receive any serious injury.
Well, rock the baby in the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock.
You know I couldn't resist this, right? This song will get in your brain and...
When the wind blows,
it will haunt you like a ghost will haunt you. This song will haunt you.
Jack be nimble, Jack be quick. Jack jumps over the candlestick. He jumped so high up above, he landed in the cradle of love.
So we're going to dedicate this to this 18-month-old baby in Malaysia, now safe and sound.
In the treetop,
after going flying.
When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. When the wind blows, I diddle diddle the cat and the fiddle. The cow jumped over the moon, and on her way down, she met a turtle dove. Said, "Let's go rocking in the cradle of love." Well, rock the baby in the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. When the wind blows, Jack and Jill went up the hill to get a pail of
milk. Let me know everything's all right. What's up? Another cup of wine. Got a
Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Isn't this a nice version of this song?
All the good laws.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and there are three very, very important things for you to see on the website tonight. And they're all one, two, three in a row. So if you go to my website, www.artbell.com, you'll see in the order I'm now reading, just click on what's new, you know, on the left in the yellow, what's new. And the first thing you're going to see is amazing Russian aircraft video. Now, I warn you, it's a couple megs. It's an MPEG file, moving video. And the speech you're going to hear is going to be Russian, so don't pay any attention to that. This came through military channels. And they're going to come and they're going to take me away one day. Anyway, it really did come through military channels to me. Why, I don't know, but, you know, listeners. And you have never in your life seen a jet aircraft do what this thing is doing. It's unbelievable. Believe me. The second item down is called Ghost Cat, and it's the best ghost cat photograph I've ever seen in my entire life. And I'm not going to explain it to you because I want you to sit there and stare at it for yourself. And first you'll think, well, just a picture of a cat in a guy's lap, right? It's the best I've ever seen. And the third item, of course, is with regard to Peter Davenport in the final communication there. So that about does it. We're going to go to open lines here in just a moment. If you will fasten your seatbelt and stay right where you are. All right, to the land of open lines we go. On the first-time caller line, you are on the air. Good morning.
Morning, Art. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, sir.
This is Bob from Monterey County.
Hi, Bob.
I was listening to your program the other night, and you had talked about the fog that was over Las Vegas and such.
Haze.
The haze.
Haze. Yeah, actually, yellow Mongolian haze.
Actually, I was in from earlier this weekend, and I was up on the 15th floor, and I saw that haze. And I just wondered if you thought maybe it was related to, I've seen a lot more earthquake activity in California, and if any of that was possibly pushing its way over to you guys.
The haze has been here for days. I've been talking about it for days now. It's terrible. It's choking. It makes your eyes water.
Yeah.
And they say it's from Mongolia. I called the Desert Information Center, and they said, yeah, it's from Mongolia, brought over by the jet stream. Now, you know what I thought about? I thought, if you could carry God knows how many tons of yellow dust from the Mongolian desert all the way across and dump it on the western U.S., then what the hell do you need ICBMs for?
Exactly.
Wonder if that occurred to anybody else.
Oh, yeah. No, as soon as you said that, that made sense. And then seeing that Russian jet tonight, that doesn't help matters either.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I watched the...
Have you ever in your life seen anything like that?
No, we have the air show here in Salinas every year.
Yes.
And so they have a lot of the latest jets there, and I've never seen a jet be able to do that. That's kind of spooky.
No, yeah, it's spooky, all right.
We don't need the Chinese to get a hold of that.
No, but the way things are going, they probably had it a year and a half ago. I don't know, but I it was the most amazing jet video I've ever seen in my whole life.
Yeah, very good.
All right, I appreciate your call, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Mongolian dust. Mongolian dust delivered by the jet stream and dumped right on us, just like... Well, now, you don't suppose it was directed at us in some way, do you? You don't suppose the jet stream could be manipulated in some way by something like, with initials that start with an H? Nah, that could never happen. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yes.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Art.
Shall we dance?
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Listen, wanted to say I love the show.
Thank you.
I think it is awesome. You are a very, very good host for the show. I listen to you pretty much every night. I try and get in at least a couple of hours of the show.
Well, thank you. The reason the show is such a big success, and it is, I think, is because it deals with stuff that nobody else does, period.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
And I want to also congratulate your internet staff, because I do listen to you on the internet through your website. Unfortunately, I don't have the show carried in my area. But
we are going to have... Oh, thank you for reminding me about internet. We're going to be making changes in some of the streaming stuff in the next month or so that I think you're going to like.
Well, that's good, because hey, anything you can do to better your website and your streaming audio would be great.
Also, we got confirmation. Thank you very much. We got confirmation, all kinds of things to tell you, that we're going up on C-Band. We have reached an agreement with a C-Band provider. And so probably within 2 weeks, we're going to have a clear feed up on C-Band, probably Telstar 5, actually, that you all can listen to. We've been working really, really hard on that. So there you are. Then there was something else I wanted to tell you about the internet, too. And now I got all excited about that and forgot what it was. So many things going on with respect to the internet. Damn it. Well, it'll come to me. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing tonight?
I'm doing.
I wanted to, I had a question about last night's show that I couldn't get through.
All right.
You were talking about cloning.
Yep. Turn your radio off all the way, if you would, please.
Sorry about that.
Awkward. Always turn off thy radio. Yes, I was talking about cloning. Oh, and I played my cloning song last night.
Which I loved.
Did you really like that?
I really loved it. I'm a big fan of Weird Al anyway.
I never knew he did such a thing, did you?
I hadn't heard it before, no.
Yeah. This is it.
Isn't it strange? Feels like I'm looking in the mirror. What would people say? If only they knew that I was part of some geneticist plan. Born to be a carbon copy man. There in a petri dish late one night, they took a donor's body, fell and fertilized a human egg. And so I say, I think I'm a clone now.
Anyway, that's all I'll play. But that's it's a pretty good song, I think. I like it.
Yeah. I had a simple question. If they are successful in cloning a human being, what's going to stop them from beginning genetic manipulation then?
Not a thing.
And creating
not a thing. They're in
like
fact,
super soldiers
in
and
fact,
super terrorists.
In fact, they'll probably start genetic... Well, I better not open my big mouth because they may have already cloned for all I know, but I think genetic manipulation is next in line.
Yeah, I mean, from that, that's going to come the super soldier and the super terrorist, and where's that going to leave the common person from that point?
In super, I wish I could say the word, but you get the idea. Super dung. That's where we're going to be left. In other words, there's going to be super this and super that, as you point out, and what's the average guy going to be anymore?
A slave cast.
Yeah, probably a slave, that's right.
Okay.
I will not be a slave to a clone. How about you?
No. No way, no how. I work too hard
live
in my
free,
life.
Live free or die, right?
Yeah. live free or go underground, one of the two.
I see. Yeah. Underground before death.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Well, I appreciate your call, sir.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, take care. Oh, boy. It will happen. The human race, of course, is going to be challenged by, eventually, something, a biologic, or perhaps, more likely, a machine, or, God help us, a combination thereof. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Oh, not until you push the button. There, now I think you're on the air. West of the Rockies, hi.
Good morning, Art. Bill from Rialto.
Hi, Bill.
What would you like to know about the Sukhoi 37?
I'd like to know how the hell it does what it does.
Okay, what it has is a vertically vectored Saturn engine. From the engine back, it's a standard Saturn engine that they use in the entire Su-27 through 37 series. And it's jointed through a series of segmented sections being turned by six equidistant hydraulic pistons run through a flight rules computer and coupled with a canard system up front.
Could you say that three times fast?
Not a chance.
It's absolutely astounding. I take it then the Su-37 is the latest and greatest, huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, we got one still that's flying at Kabinka at their test center. It's a forward-swept version.
Unbelievable!
You should see the missiles they have on it.
I don't know. I want to see it.
Mm.
Anyway, it's an awesome, totally awesome aircraft.
Totally.
All right, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you, and thank you for reciting that, which I would never really have you do even twice. It's amazing. You've got to see that video. You can download it. It's roughly about 2 megs, so it'll take you a while if you're on a dial-up. But it's worth it, and you'll put this one away in your save forever file and show to all your friends. It's just astounding. You won't get the Russian. It's, you know, you'll hear the Russian, but obviously unless you speak it, you're not going to get it. But it doesn't matter. It's, in this case, moving video is worth 10,000 words. So again, that's up there right now. Along with the ghost cat photograph, which I'm in love with. I'm just in love with that photograph and the information regarding Peter Davenport. All of that on the website right now at www.artbell.com. Again, on the left-hand side, what's new, and you will see all the items pop up. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Morning, Art.
Hi. Hey, where are you, sir?
I am listening to you on 710 KCMO in Kansas City.
All right.
Hey, I had an idea for a guest.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of the magazine Backwoods Home?
Backwoods Home. No, I don't think so.
It's pretty interesting. They have several different articles about, you know, libertarianism and basically self-reliance.
Well, I'm into that.
Yeah. Their publisher, his name's Dave Duffy. And they have a senior editor named John Earl Silvera.
Uh-huh.
And they've been having a series of interesting articles on the coming dictatorship in the United States.
Dictatorship.
Right. But it's pretty interesting.
Well, I hope we don't get a dictatorship. There are claims that we've been close to it a number of times.
Yeah.
There have been claims, I remember, rumors that Dick Nixon was going to, call off the elections, that various presidents were going to call off the elections. So far, though, your good old Constitution has held up.
That's true. Well, Franklin Delano Roosevelt came awful close. He did a lot of things with executive orders.
In wartime, with an officially declared war, the president does have a lot of powers that he would not have in normal times.
Well, apparently what he did was before the war, and apparently he had more executive orders than anyone ever. And it started way before the war. So I thought it was kind of interesting. But I thought you might be interested, you know?
Absolutely. I'll take a look for it. No doubt it has a presence on the web, so I'll check it out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, I'll check it out. Thanks.
You have a good one.
Take care. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Okay. David from Vancouver.
Yes, hello, David.
And I just, we had Scallion coming up talking about this 2012 thing.
Yeah, actually, his major topic tonight, I think, is going to be, brace yourself.
Yeah, okay.
Pole shift.
Oh, neat. Okay. Because I faxed Punnett this vision I had.
A vision?
A vision in a meditation.
What was your vision?
And,
what was your vision?
Well, I was meditating.
Yes.
Take a breath. Whew, nervous.
Oh, just relax.
And, I was relaxing. I was meditating on this lake I would go visit in my meditation, sort of a visualization thing.
Yes.
And this one day, I took a path that led to this sort of marble Greek-style patio.
Right.
Off to the side. And there's this guy, traditional old guy with the beard and robe, and he's gesturing to me to look at this, and it's got this big granite globe. It's about 3 feet in diameter or something. And it's sitting on a, like, stone kind of rib going around like the planet Earth does.
Rotating.
And then I'm watching this, and it says this, like, a gyroscope on your table that you bump hard. It goes whoop, whoop, whoop. I mean,
begins to wobble.
A big wobble.
Yeah.
A big, fast wobble, like it's, the pole almost go horizontal. Or, you know, from one side to the other. But then it rights itself, finally, after a little bit of a wobble.
Yeah, I know, but if you're trying to say that was a depiction of what's going to happen to the Earth, then by the time that thing righted itself, as in the Earth righting itself, it would have thrown all of us off like so many fleas off the back of a dog. Oh no, sir! You couldn't believe
well,
me.
You don't feel the Earth going around at 500 miles an hour right now.
No,
you know, it is.
But it's even rotation on an axis is very important to us. And if it began to go like you just described,
I just want to throw this in, and then the being or whoever this, you know, intelligence was,
yes,
conveys to me sort of telepathically, not they didn't see his mouth move, but he says, in your lifetime, and I was 45.
He said, excuse me, in your lifetime?
In your lifetime. But anyway, I was wondering, like,
well, it's gonna freak you out. Hold on a minute. It's gonna freak you out when you hear tonight how close what you just said is to what Gordon Michael Scallion thinks is coming.
Okay.
I'm afraid that you're not going to receive this news very well, but go ahead.
Okay, so I was just thinking, well, I sure wouldn't want to be in a tall building near the coast, for sure.
Oh,
but
no.
If you were underground, or, I mean, would a cow standing in the high plateau, would it fall down? I don't know. I just
sir.
Bad weather.
Sir.
If it's bad weather,
sir.
If we didn't lose our atmosphere, we'd be okay.
Sir?
Yeah.
If that, what you just described, actually happened to the Earth,
yeah,
all of the continents would be shaken around.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think what happens when continents get shaken around?
Well, lots of earthquakes.
Why? Originally, you see, sir, if you look at it, the continents fit together.
They might bump into each other.
They actually fit together very well. You can fit them together, and you can see that at one time they were one large landmass.
Right.
And something you're describing could make them one large landmass again.
Okay. And well, I'm throwing
or any other order of mishaps.
All your other predictions. Ken Casey was saying that the Pacific Northwest would be tropical, and Edmonton was going to be the capital of North America. No. That was deep in the Casey stuff. So it kind of, I don't know, I would think that there'd be life after such a thing. And certainly the cockroaches and rats would make it. I mean, you gotta go for that.
Well, there's a bright spot. Yeah, the cockroaches would make it. They say that cockroaches would survive even a full exchange nuclear war.
So anyway, you couple that and stuff in with the change in consciousness, blah, 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 shift, aliens, help, who knows what, you know, whatever your imagination can contrive is probably what's going to happen. Whatever everybody's imagination contrives is probably.
Well, either that or there's one other possibility, and that is that we all have control, maybe, of what's going to happen. I did a lot of unique experiments using mass minds, creating rain. We actually had success. I haven't done it since. But I also have not forgotten it. And so I'm not adverse to the concept that maybe if something awful is coming, and it might be, that all of us collectively might be able to prevent it.
Huh, pull it off.
Or in some way lessen the effects of it. You ever think about that?
That's wonderful. That's really positive. And
it's complete BS and we're going to die. I really don't know, but it would be worth a try, wouldn't it? I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Falling in love was the last thing I had on my mind. Holding you is the warmth that I thought I could never find. Trying to decide. Oh, baby.
take a ride? Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
It is indeed one of our nation's greatest intuitives, if not the greatest, is coming up in a moment. Gordon Michael Scallion. Most of you, almost all of you, I would imagine, really know Gordon Michael Scallion. A few will not. We're on a lot of new affiliates out there. So I'll give you a sort of a brief Gordon Michael Scallion 101, then he can correct it. I'm going to do it from memory. And we'll have his bio and we'll take off. But basically, consider the following show to be entitled, ominously, Pole Shift. That's P-O-L-E, Pole Shift, coming right up. Pole Shift. Gordon Michael Scallion is a futurist. He's editor of a monthly newsletter, Intuitive Flash. He is author of the best-selling book, Notes from the Cosmos, A Futurist's Insights into the World of Dream, Prophecy, and Intuition. Gordon educated in electronics, experienced a health crisis in 1979, which led him on a path of self-discovery and the ability to assess higher states of consciousness. His insights and ability to forecast changes in Earth's environment and social trends have been featured on NBC, CNBC, Fox Television, Unsolved Mysteries, The Discovery Channel, The Learning Channel, My Program, as well as online print publications all around the world. He is a teacher of consciousness studies and metaphysics and author of The Future Map of the World 2012, a graphic representation of his global prophecies on Earth changes. He's extremely well respected. You may recall my last interview with Gordon 2 years ago, he made the prediction that the sunspot count will break all records during the current solar cycle 23. The previous record has been approximately 150. He said, I see 200 to 300 and higher during this cycle. On April 2nd, the sunspot count exceeded 350, in fact. Mr. Scallion's published predictions for 2001 call for a collapse of many dot-com companies. Remember, a major decline in U.S. markets, a recession, a rise in the price of gold to happen yet, the eruption of volcanoes causing long winters and very short springs, especially in North America, and finally, we will talk about it tonight, the beginning of a pole shift. Now, briefly, so that Gordon doesn't have to go through it again, he did have a health crisis referred to in the bio here in 1979. He was going to speak in front of a group of high-powered businessmen. It was a very important presentation for him to give. And he got up on stage, and suddenly he couldn't say a word. His voice was simply gone. I mean, gone. Along, obviously, with the presentation. They called an ambulance. They took him to the hospital. They did every conceivable test you can imagine, including psychological tests. While in the hospital, he began to have visions and see geometric forms in various colors, eventually culminating in visions which appear to be all too true. He sees them as, if you can imagine, three television screens in front of you. This is all from my memory, so I'm probably getting a little bit of it wrong, but basically the visions are about possible futures for all of us. The brighter the picture, the more probable the future. And if you get one eventually that is in full-blown color and in great detail, then you have an almost absolutely a positive future you're looking at. And so that, in that way and in some other ways, he gauges the probability of this particular vision becoming true. as with all predictive things, timelines are always very, very difficult. And people will ask, well, how come some of the stuff you said about earthquakes in Southern California hasn't happened yet? Well, because it hasn't happened yet. Doesn't mean it won't. But whether it's remote viewing or the kind of intuitive prediction that Gordon Michael Scallion does, because it has not happened yet, doesn't mean it won't. Now, in that brief description of Scallion 101, Gordon, welcome back to the show, first of all.
Good to be back, Art.
What did I miss?
Nothing. It was a flashback back to the hospital. That's how accurate it was.
And so there you are. I mean, that's how these visions come to you, and they have been for all these years now, as much a burden as a blessing, I'm sure. A lot of times I remember you've told me after shows you're just absolutely, well, in fact, hardly able to do shows at times. You've taken months off at a time, haven't you, and just said, no more, I'm out of here, and go to your country home.
Yeah, I try to at least once a year get together with you, and sometimes if things aren't too intense, you know, twice a year. This is an important time to be on your show. I know it's been a long lapse since our last show, but several things have come to me since that last show.
Some of that's my doing, I'm afraid.
Well, the things I'm seeing are in bright technicolor now, and that has not been there for some 20 years. So,
well, all the Native Americans are saying the same thing. They're contacting me, which they never do, Gordon. Native Americans hardly ever contact me to come on the program. They just don't do it. And I've been getting this mass of contacts lately saying it's urgent that we get on your program. So obviously there's something to be told that's out there.
We're close to the changes that are going to be challenging and difficult. And in another sense, they're going to be dynamic and as a blessing. Many positive things are going to come out of this.
I think the world has probably been through many changes like the one we're headed toward right now, hasn't it?
You know, as a technical person, you know, like yourself, you know, with a scientific background, you tend to chart things. You look for things that are repetitive, things that cycles that you can follow.
Sure.
Just like electronics is based on cycles.
You bet.
So I believe in cycles. One of the cycles that we're all too aware of right now is the current number 23 sunspot cycle. You know, we can, you know, and we have something this time we've never had before. We have some dynamic satellites parked, photographing and observing everything that's going on now. So while we've been recording sunspots for centuries, we can now, you know, watch them in real time, and we can also measure the effect on the Earth, which we have not been able to do before. And we can see,
Gordon, I've lived, as you have, through a few of these cycles now and paid a lot of attention to them. We're both ham operators, and so we do. And I have never, ever seen a cycle like this. Coming up to the supposed peak, it was meek. And then the sun did a polarity flip, and all hell broke loose. I've never seen these mega flares. The one we had, I don't think I told you this, Gordon, or maybe I did, but the night we had this mega flare, the first one, I called I called somebody who watches the sun every day at the Big Bear Solar Observatory. He's the guy at the telescope. And he said, we're registering this as an X20, but our equipment is saturated, and I personally believe it's probably at least an X22 or 23. That's gigantic. That's frightening. If that had been 2 days earlier and aimed at the Earth, oh my.
Well, we remember what happened in 1989 when we had a storm that did not even approach that intensity level.
Not even close.
And what happened to Canada?
Grid went down.
We lost the grid, and you know, I'm not too far from there where I live here in New England, and we had crews from here living up there for over a month trying to restore power. So we're not talking about power that went out for a weekend. There were communities up there, measured in the hundreds of thousands, that were without power in the winter for a period of almost a month. In some cases, it was longer. That's a long time to be without vital power.
Yes, it is. In fact, a couple of the recent flares have disabled some transponders on television satellites that we've got in geosynchronous orbit. One telecommunications satellite has been damaged. I don't know that people really know this, but it's happening. And we're sort of just on the bare outskirts of the effect of this, because it was pointed away from us, thank God, by 2 days. Now, all of these spots, of course, are going to either get bigger or smaller and come back around again.
It's the cycle, is approximately 11 years, and as we know, it varies somewhat. And that cycle in February, had counts of 80. Now, we're spiking over 300, and I don't think it's over. I think we're gonna find there's gonna be even larger ones coming. So I don't think that. Yeah, this was like a last hurrah peak that just fired up here. I think there are more coming, but the fact that it's not pointed at Earth does not mean that its effects are not inducing something into the Earth itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part that I've been seeing clear visions on of what's going on there.
All right, what is happening to our Earth, and how is it that a flare, which is gigantic, yes, but is somewhat off in a different direction, has a large effect on Earth, larger than we've already seen, that is?
Well, when flares occur, if they're pointed at Earth, our concerns always are electronics. We have the capacity now to turn some of the satellites away. A lot of them are powered, so we can protect some of them. But you can imagine if we had a direct hit, what it would do to our communications network and thus our economy.
That's right.
So we're now in a stage where a good portion of our economy is dependent upon stable communication circuits. We lose those, and we're going to see an even greater decline, especially with our economy in the state it's in now. We're really at a stress point. What else is...
Oh, we just lost him. We just lost Gordon. I have no idea. I could hear a number of clicks. I'm sure the rest of you were hearing those clicks as well. And we just suddenly lost Gordon. Now, I have no idea why that's happening. We'll try and get him back. Isn't this interesting? Okay, we'll try and get him back. That's all he can do.
Hey, Amber, you're calling.
Yes, I'm sure it's late where I'm
at. Hello?
Yes, hi, Gordon.
I don't know, we just lost the circuit.
I know. I heard a number of clicks during our conversation, and then at the end, one big one, and boom, you were gone.
Yeah, it slowly faded away. It was really bizarre. Nothing I can register at this end. I just heard your voice just slowly fade away.
Wow. Well, anyway, I've got you back. And so we were talking about, first of all, in the center of our Earth, there's a big argument, is it a giant mass of iron? I think a lot of scientists believe it's just a big iron ball in there with all the pressure and everything. You don't believe that, though, do you?
No, I don't. I don't believe that the... I believe the core is more of a plasma, incredible pressures. The way that I kind of see it in a visual sense is that the Earth is kind of a mirror of the Sun at a different cycle, a different period of time, if you will, where, whatever we find on the Sun, we're going to find on the Earth, obviously much, much different. So I see this plasma in the center, and then I see from the center of the core different levels. In fact, I see the exact same number of levels as we have in the atmosphere. So I see there's a total of seven that I see counting from the Earth to space, for example, and I see the same thing in the Earth itself.
Oh, isn't that interesting? A geologic reflection of the setup of our atmosphere.
As above, so below.
Yeah.
And I think that currently there's a lot of misinformation out there, mostly from scientific textbooks. I recently was asked to teach some classes for a university on environmental changes. And so I was looking through some of the textbooks, and they make statements, that the Earth's magnetic field is created by the solid core of the Earth. Well, we don't know that. It's a theory, but it becomes a fact. And there's a lot of those things that, for example, we don't know really how thick the lithosphere is, or the crust, the ground we stand on. We think it's 40 miles, but we really don't know. And we don't really know how many boundaries or layers we have in the Earth. We have theories on that. We also have theories on how the magnetic field of the Earth is produced. But we really don't know these things. We're exploring them. I think we're moving closer to it.
We don't even really know what magnetism what gravity really is, do we? We don't know why. We think it's related to mass, but they don't exactly know how to explain it, do they?
No. No, we can replicate it in laboratories. We can take magnets, for example, certain types of magnets, and we can create a similar effect, and we can get to a zero mass, and we can say by this observation it looks like magnetism is somehow involved, but we really don't know those things. They're theories, just like the tectonic plate system, and the fact that the Earth and all of the continents at one time were all together in a place called Pangaea, and then they broke up, and it was the continents all moved, and it looks like puzzles now, but if they took all the continents and kind of moved them, they would kind of like go back together, thereby proving that...
They do, in fact, go together.
They go together fairly closely.
Yes.
But it's a theory again. It's the current theory. There were theories before that, and I believe there'll be a theory after this one. I do not believe it's a reality. And in time, I think we'll see. But all of these things takes us down paths where we tend to look at things over millions of years, or changes over millions of years. And so from the scientific point of view, we say that Earth changes do not happen quickly.
Right.
They happen over long time periods. And yet, we're starting to find out now that indeed there have been events that have happened quickly. We know that, for example, about 11,500 years ago or so, that there was some very quick major event that caused cataclysms in the Earth. And there was certain things that we know transpired. We know that was mass extinction. About 90% of all the species of the planet were gone. We know that the mammoths were frozen in mass.
Right.
By the perhaps millions, but we don't know for sure what the mechanism was. We just know it happened, and the word cataclysm does not fit well with science.
Well, does cataclysm also equal evolutionary process?
I think so. I think it's a changing from one, it's a cycle. So cataclysm would do that, yes.
Big rock or sun radiation kills dinosaurs, whatever you want to believe, followed by the emergence of mankind, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and the decline of certain species and the birth of new species and new flora. We know that animals were very large at some point in our history. We can argue when that was, whether it was millions of years ago or tens of thousands of years ago, but we knew we had animals, and all of a sudden these animals that were giants became very small. And we also know that somewhere along the line, humankind appeared. And we also had theories that the Earth was a certain age, but every 5 years, 10 years or so, we pushed that boundary back. And we now say the Earth is older, and we now say that these changes may have happened very quickly.
Yes, very quickly indeed. Actually, sort of one of those overnight things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a 24-hour time period, I think it's very possible things have happened, as they will again.
All right, well, that's part of what we're going to be talking about tonight. Hold on, Gordon Murphy, bottom of the hour. My guest is Gordon Michael Scallion. And we are going to be talking about something that may disturb some of you. And if you are disturbed by this kind of intuitive information, some of which could be pretty worrisome depending on how you look at it, and there are two ways to look at it, then you may not want to listen.
Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nod.
There are some rides we're all on together. This is one of them. Now, whether you want to know the final destination or even what destination lies immediately ahead or not, well, that's up to you. Gordon Michael Scallion is a well-respected intuitive who has a lot to say about where we're going. If you want to know, then keep listening. Otherwise, there's probably a cartoon on somewhere. Oh, a little bit of a promo here. You're going to want to hear this one. Coming up this Saturday, repeat, this Saturday is the first show on exorcisms that we ever did with Father Malachi Martin, late Father Malachi Martin. And they're putting together a special program which is going to air this Saturday in the Coast slot. So if you get Coast on Saturday, boy, do you have a treat coming up. That's the first show with Father Malachi, the late Father Malachi Martin, on exorcism. He was the exorcist. Back now to Gordon Michael Scallion. And Gordon, I wanted to ask you about something. You mentioned the layers of the earth, and I wonder if we could elaborate, and could you tell me as much as you know about the individual layers of the earth? I mean, we all know about the one we're standing on, but everything below that's a big mystery.
We have some rough ideas of what lies there. We're able to send shock waves into the earth, and we're also able to measure earthquake waves that are produced. And by studying these waves, as a wave passes through one density layer, like the crust, for example,
right,
into the next, they get an indication. And so, you know, a picture has been emerging for the past 40 or 50 years. It's given us at least the understanding that there are these layers. Kind of what I see, in my visions anyways, is that this crust that we walk on, which is called the lithosphere, which appears to be, you know, ground, dirt, is in reality, it's full of life, full of not only life as in organisms, but electricity. And as we leave this boundary, we get to the next boundary. It's kind of like a good analogy would be is if I took a glass of water and I poured some oil into the glass, we would see a separation because of the densities. And this is kind of what the different layers of the earth are like. The crust itself is actually the thinnest part of the whole earth's diameter. It's kind of like the eggshell, and then inside of an egg you have the yolk and all the other materials. And so it's the thinner part, it's the part that has solidified, and it kind of floats on another layer. This next layer is kind of like, an analogy would be like soapstone. and if you can see the crust is kind of like granite, just as an analogy here, that these kind of float on top of each other. And in my visions, these layers, these multiple layers, as you go deeper and deeper and deeper, become warmer. The Earth itself is cooling very slowly, but it's cooling from a different sense. It's cooling more from the atmospheric side than it is from the core side. So it's cooling in that fashion. The heat that's in the Earth is not cooling because at one time we were a little part of the sun. It's heat because of the fact that these boundaries or these layers are what I believe creates magnetism in conjunction with activity from the sun. And it's the movement of these is kind of like a solid state device, if you will, like a transistor or a diode. And we have these two polarities that are creating electricity. It also creates heat because these layers get stuck often. They don't move. We scientifically, they tend to think that all of these layers move at the same speed. Well, the sun, if we look at the sun, we know that the sun at the equator moves at a different speed than it does at the poles.
That's right.
And we were able to observe in real time a pole shift at the sun, a magnetic pole shift at the sun. And that event was magnificent to watch, and we could see what happened. So in the sun, where the North Pole was, it became the South Pole, and vice versa.
That was about a month ago.
Yes, a little more. Yes, in that time frame. And so here on the Earth, we have a similar situation where I believe that these layers are moving at different speeds, and occasionally they get stuck for long time periods. And in the process of these layers moving at different speeds, they tend to, when they do get stuck, we see something as a phenomena, which is the decline of the magnetic field. We see the strength of the magnetic field as measured in a Gauss rate. We see it declining. And if we look back and we do core samples of the past, looking back hundreds of thousands of years, we see a similar situation that has occurred in the past. So one of the scientific tools is you look to the past to study of the present and the future.
Sure.
And then what we see there is that there was a clear indication that the magnetic field in the past would decline to such a point, and then there would be a reversal of the magnetic poles, just like it has on the sun. And that happens. There is also, around that same time period, changes in the environment. So that particular pole shift is called a magnetic pole shift. It's where, if we have a compass now and it's pointing north, if a pole shift occurred, we would have to go 180 degrees or we would be looking in a different direction.
It would be pointed south.
I'm sorry?
The needle would be pointed south.
Correct.
I don't have a good understanding, Gordon, of what that would mean for us. A lot of people say absolutely nothing. A lot of people say really something substantial, and I don't know. You obviously see, I mean, we've titled tonight's program Pole Shift, so you obviously see a pole shift a coming, right?
I see it. In the new part that I've seen since January of this year, a new element to the constant repeating dreams and visions I've had of magnetic pole shifts, I've had a new element added to it that gave a greater detail of what goes on. Magnetic pole shifts, if the pole shifted a small amount, let's say 7 degrees.
All right.
One of my longstanding forecasts was that we would see three separate 7-degree westward movements. So pole shifts do not necessarily have to be 180 degrees.
Right.
The 180 degrees ones are easy to find. We can find the measurements by doing core samples, and we can tell by studying them that there was a complete reversal. These things can be a partial one. They can be 90 degrees. They can be, and they could go 180, and then within a century or two, just drift back. But even if it was a small pole shift, let's say of 7 degrees, the magnetic field of the Earth besides affecting animals, which use it for migration routes, so you'd have all that changing, it also affects weather patterns. So the biggest change, if we had a pole shift, would be weather. We would see climates changing. We would see jet streams changing. We would see ocean currents changing. There would be significant changes, but not necessarily what we would call cataclysmic, you know, such as things that might have occurred in the past. That's the magnetic pole shift. I now believe that there will be a magnetic pole shift, as I have for over 20 years, but I believe it's going to be as a result of something else.
Oh?
And that something else is that I believe that the lithosphere, or the crust, is going to move relative to the other six layers that are below us.
That's not good.
That would not be good.
Obviously, they've moved in the past.
There are theories that they have moved. There is a great debate scientifically that ever occurred. There is no scientific proof whatsoever that the Earth, for example, has tumbled in space. In other words, the whole planet just flipped. There's theories. There's many books written about it with a lot of data related to cataclysms. But we have no scientific proof yet that ever occurred. I personally do not believe it ever has occurred. That is much different, however, than a magnetic pole shift or a shift in the crust. The shift in the crust, like I said, occurs, I believe, because these get stuck. The layers of movement, the crust,
stuck,
and when they release themselves, it then seeks a new balance. Because, you know, the Earth is spinning on its axis, moving at 1,000 miles an hour. It's just like a top. And it wants to keep that balance and the momentum. If it ever loses its momentum, such as a large buildup of ice at the poles, we throw that. I mean, water is heavy. It's very heavy. Take a gallon jug of water, and it gives you an example of the weight of water. Now think about all of the ice that's at the poles. Imagine if that built up too high. That then could throw the centrifugal force of the Earth off, and you could have the Earth trying to stabilize or balance itself, just like a gyroscope would try to balance itself.
You know, somebody sent me a kind of a toy gyroscope, I don't know, a month ago, and it was filled with water, colored water, actually. But when you spin it, it just went for a very, very long time, and the water was the weight in the outer ring of the gyroscope. It was absolutely fascinating the way it worked.
Yeah.
And then it spun toward the center at the end.
And that's a good example, too. That's a real good visual aid of motion when you consider that the crust portion, the lithosphere, contains 75% water. So we're looking at a huge weight. And you can imagine that's spinning around. So if you alter that at all, in any way, even a degree, that water is going to go trying to seek a new level. And so one of the concerns that I see, or the biggest concern I see, is the triggering of massive volcanoes and a movement of large bodies of water.
One of the more difficult things in what you do and what remote viewers do appear to be timelines, to know when something is actually going to happen. Not so much that it's going to happen, but when. And that seems to be the most difficult thing for most intuitives or remote viewers to nail down. Is that true with you?
It's true. You can see events that are in the close timeline. Let's say events that are going to be in a three-month time period. They're much, much easier. Earth sensitives, of which there are now thousands of them in the world that write to me on a regular basis, and there's multiple networks of them, and as a quake is going to occur, they physically react to a quake or a volcano.
In some way, yes.
And they can kind of tune in and say, you know, within, you know, a few days or a week, we're going to have this event. So, you know, they're just like a little barometer. And that's a close-in time frame. when you look at a long time frame, unless you have a particular vision that shows you a current newspaper, for example, when I predicted Northridge and Kobe and Andrew, I actually saw newspapers. And
that's
so for me,
very
it was, so for me, that was like, you know, a blessing.
And a gift.
And it's a rarity. Other times, I have to look at things like, do I see a car? And does the car have a sticker on it, given the year? Or I have to look and see, is it spring or is it winter?
But if you're seeing something gigantic on a global scale, you're seeing it on a global scale, and you're not going to see a newspaper.
I suppose. And most of the things that I see regarding the Earth is always from a perspective of like a satellite in the sky. And I don't know why that is, but I do. It's like I'm looking, like I'm flying over the Earth, the United States, and I'm looking down, and I observe. And sometimes I'm totally conscious when this is occurring, and I can sketch out what I'm seeing. But it's always from that perspective of out in space looking back or peeling into the center of the Earth and seeing what's going on there. So it's always as an observer rather than somebody who is time traveled to that particular time and is active and is living in that time frame. I'm still at the current time, but I'm observing an event and then trying to figure out when this is going to occur. So visionaries and remote viewers who are doing it professionally, usually what they try to do is to establish some other things, like they may see a volcano go off, and they look, and then they'll get another scene or vision, and then they may see an earthquake, and then the third one might show something larger. And so they're able to then say, you know, if this volcano goes off, and if this earthquake occurs here, then
the following
will occur. So that's a common pattern. You know, even some of the best, I mean, the most studied intuitive was Edgar Cayce. And he was able to, with a better than 90% accuracy, help people with physical ailments. Because they were present, or they at least were alive at that time, they didn't have to be in the same space as he was.
Mm-hmm.
But he was able to say, this is what you have for a disease, and this is what you can have to control it. When he then moved out into the world of earth changes and other kinds of prophetic things, then the timeline became fuzzy. And he would often come back and say, well, what was supposed to happen in 1933 or 34 or 35 didn't happen because something else changed in the matrix. There was a shift in the earth, or something else happened, and this will now happen 20 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's the same problem with the timelines. You look at events, and you look at the warning signs. We're at the point today where we can just look at true real-time events. We can say, what is happening in the year 2001 that has not happened for 50 years, 100 years, or 1,000 years, or since I recorded history? One of the things we can point to, of course, is the number of earthquakes and the depth of these earthquakes.
Right.
We can also account for the volcanic activity.
And
we can also
many?
Look at the sun and
yes.
say, look what's happening at the sun.
Yes.
We can go to the next step and we can say, let's look at the magnetic field of the earth. We look at all these things and they're all records off the chart and accelerating. So we know that something is going on, and the discussions would be what and what will the outcome of this be.
Let me tell you briefly, in the hour prior to your coming on, in fact, actually the last caller of the hour prior to your coming on tonight, a caller called up and said he had a vision. He had been meditating, and in this vision he saw a man with a beard or something or another, and there was a globe rotating next to this man, and he took that to be the Earth. And all of a sudden, the globe, like a... He said, if you imagine a top, a spinning top, and somebody just sort of slamming it, tipping it with their finger, so it's going sideways almost, he said, that's what happened to that globe. And the man turned to him and said, in your lifetime. And that was the vision. And I said, you may have some eerie echoes to be hearing here.
Yeah.
Is that too far from what might happen?
I don't think it's too far, and again, we don't know the timeline. Where my original timeline was that between 1998 and 2002,
right?
Between that time period, we would see a shifting of the poles magnetically, and that the warning signs that we would see beforehand would be three major quakes in California, followed by a breaking up of or a splitting of some of the land masses in Southern California. The three quakes occurred. The splitting was only 44 miles in the area that I saw it occurring in, so that did not occur. But we're still in that window. Whether it occurs in that window or in the 2012 window, which many remote viewers and sensitives are now believing. They believe that somehow these things have been put off until the year 2012.
Coincidentally, when the Mayan calendar ends.
Yeah, it's in with the Mayan calendar. I don't know. I know that we're in a window, and the hot part of this window is this summer.
This summer?
This summer, I think we're going to see unprecedented, Earth movements and volcanic activity. Whether that becomes the trigger for a pole shift now or in the year 2012, I don't know.
All right, hold tight. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back. Gordon Michael Scallion is here. I'm Mark Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll get into the summer here in a moment. Stay right where you are.
West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222. Or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Well, this is synchronicity, all right. I've got a message from Rich in Concord, California, who says, "Hey, Art, I just saw the Northern Lights cover the northern sky of the San Francisco Bay Area bright red and shimmering. This is not normal." It's just after your phone went dead. Well, actually, I swung around to my computer and brought up my browser and took a look at the Northern Hemisphere enlarged view of what's going on right now with the Northern Lights. And sure enough, the activity, the auroral activity level right now is a great big 10. And my guess would be that part of the red, which is the most active zone, is dipping down into the north-central part of the U.S. and quite a bit farther south than that. So, yes, if you're in Oregon, Washington, any of the northern border states, Canada, you're probably getting quite a show by now. And it just so happens we're talking about what the sun is doing, and it's putting on a beautiful display for us this evening, particularly those of us to the north. So what you're seeing out there right now is as a result of the near brush we had with this gigantic almost scary sun flare that occurred the other day off the western rim of the sun. We are getting an aurora borealis right now, certainly in the mid-latitudes. So there you are, a little bit of synchronicity for what we're talking about right now. All right, once again, back to Gordon Michael Scallion. Hey, how about that, Gordon? They're seeing aurora right now all over. I don't know if you've had a chance to take a look at where the aurora is, but boy, it's a big one tonight.
Yeah, from my little mini observatory here in New England, there's nothing showing up here.
Okay,
we don't have the clearest skies tonight, but there's nothing showing up here.
Yeah, it seems to be dipping down in the center part of the U.S., but the activity level is 10, the highest it can be. And so there's somebody out there getting a real good show tonight. Anyway, so the sun is doing backflips, and we were talking about what's coming perhaps this summer.
There are some things that I'm fairly confident are going to occur, they're not cataclysmic. These are events that will occur, such as, I believe in cycles, and I think that the cycle we're in right now is the same cycle we had between 1992 and 1994. So if we look at events that happened in the world at that time, I think we're going to see very similar events, perhaps higher in magnitude this time because of the charge that the Earth has received as a result of this current sunspot cycle.
It's getting charged, all right. In fact, Neil in Dennis in Minnesota saying, just for your information, Northern Lights tonight are the best I've seen in 20 years. Listen, you people up north, go take pictures for us and send it to the website, please. Continue, Gordon.
Okay. Before I do that, let me share the vision that I had, because this is the prime reason why
you're here.
I agreed to be here at this time. The vision happened. I have a small farm, and during one of the days, I was out walking on our road, and the time period was early spring. I think it was last year, March or April.
Right.
And as I was walking on the road, and I was heading north. The road is a north-south road. And so as I was walking along, all of a sudden, I started feeling a vision coming on. And for me, what happens is I start feeling electrical sensations in my arm and spine. And that usually tells me that in about a minute or so, I'm going to lose my vision. And so if I'm driving, I pull over, get out of the car, or just stop the car. Or if I'm walking or any place, I just try to go someplace quiet, away from anybody, and just be by myself. These events don't last long. You know, they last maybe a minute or two total, and then it just snaps back.
Not great for driving, though.
No, no. I stopped. I went over, got off the road, walked into the woods a bit, and then all of a sudden what happens to me is that I start getting immense headaches. Back of my neck is where it starts, moves up, slowly up, and then I feel these electrical charges moving up my legs and my spinal column, and then the next thing I know is I hear a popping sound, like someone hit a popper, and all of a sudden my eyesight is just like replaced, so my inner vision kind of now dominates, and my optical vision is suppressed, so I no longer see the woods or where I am, I just see whatever is in my inner optical senses. In this particular case, the vision I'm seeing is I'm still on that same road. I'm in the same road, except now I see blossoms on all the trees. And so I know it's summertime. Okay. So my training is immediately look for signs for time and place.
Yeah.
And then,
summer.
And to the right of me, at about 2 o'clock, again, I'm facing north in this vision, too, and at about 2 o'clock, I see the sun. So that's telling me that it's probably, walking in that direction of that sun, it's probably around 11 o'clock, 11 a.m.
Okay.
And the next thing I know is within a matter of seconds, almost like slow motion, the sun goes from about 2 o'clock and crosses in front of me over to about 11 o'clock.
Oh, my.
So very slow, it just moves across. And then it stops at that place. And so my sense at this time is that, am I seeing a timeline indicating that something is going to occur over a period of hours? How long would it take? But then I realized that the sun was in a different direction than it would set. It was going from the east, more from the, instead of the arc it would take in the summer, of a high summer sun.
I'm with you.
It was moving in a different direction.
I'm with you. In other words, it would normally traverse a path you would know in the summertime. You would know what that path would be, but it was going in a whole new direction, which means the earth moved.
And then I looked at it, and then the next part of the vision is that I saw myself in a car wash. And in the car, if you've ever been in a car wash when you're sitting in it, and like these automatic robo car washes, and as the water starts moving and the carriage that surrounds your car starts moving, you get the sensation that your car is moving rather than the device that's washing your car.
That's right.
And when it first happened, yeah, I actually put my brakes on. Then I realized how silly that was, that the car's obviously not moving.
Yes, yes.
And then the vision snapped back to the 11 o'clock position. The car wash went away. And then I could see the leaves of the trees and the buds starting to move. And I could hear this high-pitched whistle. And then I could see the trees were really starting to blow. I mean, massive wind. And then there was a pop sound, and then I was back into, you know, my current time period. So I interpreted this to tell me that the car wash was just a symbol to kind of tell me that the Earth itself is not going to turn, but that the crust, the lithosphere, is going to slip over the next boundary layer.
To us, that would be the Earth moving.
Yeah.
For sure.
And that...
but it wouldn't... let me be clear.
Direction.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt, but I want to be really clear. The Earth would not be tilting, as I first imagined, but rather the ground beneath our feet, all the ground, would itself be moving, as in the whole continent moving.
Correct. So... Again, the question remains is that it's moving westward in my particular vision. So what that tells me is that we will have a new North Pole from our reference point now. But the axis would remain the same. The axis itself may deviate somewhat, but it pretty much is the same. But what's happened is that to establish equilibrium, the Earth's crust kind of moves. And where it ends up, I'm not sure. I saw that movement dimension. I saw the time period it took. I know it's summer. Is it this summer? Is it 2012? I have no idea. I just have a feeling that this summer, regardless of that event, we're going to see great changes geophysically. And I have seen... images of where those places are going to be this summer.
How many type precursors do you think that we will see to this? I mean, obviously, we all know we're seeing the sun do really weird things right now. We're seeing the weather do extremely odd things. We're going through changes. They're talking... You know, they're now talking about... They're measuring another El Nino on the way. And out in the Pacific. And so all kinds of strange things are going on.
You know, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, the whole El Nino phenomena, of which nobody is really sure that's causing it. I've had a series of visions of what causes it, which I believe is due to a combination of the Chandler wobble or the stability of the Earth. We tend to think of the Earth spinning nice and smoothly on its axis.
That's right.
But actually, there's a series of about six different wobbles. One wobble, which astrologers are very aware of, which is the precession of the equinoxes, which means that every 2100 or so years we're in a different sign, you know, from Pisces to Aquarius and so forth, because the Earth itself kind of wobbles on its axis in a complete cycle, takes about 26,000 years. But there's also other cycles that are shorter, as some of these are down to a matter of about a year and a half, or it can vary a couple months, to 6.5 to 7 years. And it's those closer in wobbles that I believe are what creates El Niños. And what sustains them, I believe, in part, is the interaction between the sun and the earth. So I think it's a combination of the sun's activity, earth receiving it, getting charged, and the wobble. And I believe that's what causes the, you know, the El Niño. And when, you know, years ago we predicted that we would see these unprecedented ongoing El Niños that would kind of break the cycles and the patterns. And I believe that has occurred and is occurring.
Do you think that what you saw represents all of, would all of the continents in the world, the land masses, would they all shift in the same manner?
Not in the same manner. The, you know, the lithosphere is all attached. It's all one piece. And where it is faulted is where we see magma rising to the surface. Cracks,
right.
and I believe these cracks are due to the stresses from the lithosphere's movement. I think the lithosphere is constantly moving, but typically very slowly. And now it's moving very rapidly, and I think it's getting ready to release itself. So you can't move one part of it without affecting the other parts, but it would, the effects would be different. For example, at the equator, it would be like a compression, and at the poles, it might be an expansion.
Huh.
So it's like a rubber band. It would depends on the, whether it's moving northward or southward.
If the movement was as suggested in your vision, what would that probably mean for our continent? And you mentioned big winds, a whistling sound and big winds.
Well, we would repeat, I believe, the last cycle. And I think the last cycle was about 12,000 years ago. I think we had a very similar situation back then. I think the North Pole back then could be tracked to the Hudson Bay area, and now it will, you know, if this continues, we'll find it. We'll have a North Pole in a new place. It will affect everything. The first thing that seems to happen, based on past geology, is that we have climatic changes. And the most serious of the changes is the release of volcanism. And that's where I see the greatest problem. We had a really strange spring. I'm here in New England, and I still have snow on the ground. I mean, we're a full month of planting season behind. And a lot of this was due to volcanic activity that occurred in January, December and January. So you can imagine, if we have some kind of stress on the crust and we release, you know, a half a dozen volcanoes instead of one or two,
right?
Those things are going to bring about, you know, great changes. And so the thing that I believe that, you know, that destroyed most of the life 12,000 years ago, the distant freezing of the mastodons, I believe that was due to a crustal displacement. I believe that then induced weather brought in Arctic air and snow and moisture, because as the volcanoes fire off, few people realize that 75% of the volcanoes are undersea.
That's right. There's one quite active off Oregon at the moment. Do you imagine this crustal displacement to be quite a bit lesser than that one?
I have no way of comparing the intensity. I believe the winds were the same. I think from a point of view of population, you know, we have no way of knowing what the population was at that time. I mean, we're still arguing whether we had a civilization that was modern past 5,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with populations of 5 billion people, it's obviously going to affect a lot more.
Sure.
And
is there any way to guess how strong and sustained the winds would be, and why would there be winds? What in that process would create winds? Any idea?
As you alter the magnetic field and you alter the position of the landmass relative to, let's say, the current jet streams. You create wind. You got to remember that the Earth is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour.
Right.
It's centrifugally moving, and now all of a sudden you're altering that. So the Earth is going to shudder, literally shudder.
Right.
So wherever you were on the Earth, no matter where you were, you would not be able to stand for a period of time, you know, whether it's minutes or seconds, I don't know. But once that releases this and you start releasing steam into the atmosphere because of volcanic activity, you now are pouring, you know, billions of cubic tons of moisture into the air, which is then picked up by various winds, or trade winds, and you create a suction is the only word I can describe. It's like if I put a lot of heat in one area and 500 miles away a lot of cool area, I'm going to have that drawing, which creates our weather pattern.
Which is
so,
what we've seen in the Midwest here recently,
yes.
A lot of it, in fact,
yep.
Too much of it.
And then that, in turn, increases it. Now, here in New Hampshire, the highest sustained winds of the United States, maybe the world, I don't know, is at an observatory here at Mount Washington. And we've had winds here clocking close to 300 miles an hour.
Mm.
Not sustained, but they've measured that. I think it would be safe to assume that we would see, you know, those kind of winds on a global scale, at least until things kind of settle down. So it's kind of a thing, it rushes down, and, you know, it might take a period of 24 to 72 hours before things kind of settle down.
So we could have 300-mile-per-hour winds, or something in that category, for as much as 24 hours or more.
And places that were kind of, let's say, temperate, you know, might change very rapidly in places that, and it would be massive melt-offs, because you will have effectively altered the position. It's not that the Earth has turned its axis towards the sun, and therefore you're getting a melt-off, but rather you've just moved your landmass. So the landmass, an example might be...
I'll tell you what, hold the example. We're at the bottom of the hour already. Holy smokes. Gordon Michael Scallion is my guest. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This is Coast to Coast AM.
West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Gordon Michael Scallion is my guest, one of our nation's most respected intuitives. Many, many people follow what he says, and for a very good reason. I think I've always said, and I'll say again, from my point of view, this man is the real McCoy. We'll get right back to him. Once again, from New Hampshire, here's Gordon Michael Scallion. Gordon, after a vision of the sort you just had, people will want to know several things immediately, so I'll ask for them. One is they're going to want to know, what does this mean for me? That's just the way people are. We've already covered the fact that
The crustal plates would be moving, resulting in, at the very least, perhaps up to 300 mile per hour winds for a sustained period of time. Obviously, a lot of people are not going to make it through to the other side of that change. In the old days, we used to do estimates, I think, of the percent dead in nuclear war. Military did that all the time. They played those kind of games. If you were to apply that same sort of logic to the kind of catastrophic event you're talking about, what kind of figures do you think we'd get?
I really don't know. I know one thing, and maybe this is an indirect answer, because somebody can figure it out. In the past, when we look at ancient civilizations, such as the recent discovery in Alexandria, where they found that the whole city very abruptly went underwater.
Right.
And it was because back then, most of the civilization was on coastal areas. And how are we today? I mean, where is our civilization based today, the majority of our civilization?
Coastal areas.
We're in coastal areas. So that any time we have anything, from a hurricane to an offshore quake to anything going on that would change anything, weather-wise or tectonic-wise, the coasts are going to be the hardest hit.
Right.
So they're the most vulnerable. I don't know the percentage, but if somebody told me that more than half of our population was on coastal areas, I would say that's probably conservative. If there are warning signs, for example, if there was a melt-off, we are having a melt-off right now. I mean, we've lost so much of our glaciers and
yes, we
Greenland,
have.
It's unbelievable.
That's right.
And
Antarctica as well.
Yeah. But if we were watching the water levels coming up, I mean, the first thing we would do as our current civilizations, we would try to stop it. You know, we would try to build dams. Or if we had the time, we would try to do those things. If something happens very quickly, we won't have the time.
Right.
So coastal areas are always at risk. We've seen it in the past decade of the damage from hurricanes. Weather-related stuff on coastal areas has been unprecedented. So we're going to, you know, people who are on the coast areas are at the highest risk. And if something happened abruptly and you moved large bodies of water, you can't displace that kind of water in the planet without affecting everything on the planet, obviously. So, you know, that might be an indirect answer. I don't know what the population figures are on the coast, but I would say they are at the greatest risk. And very rapidly, you know, we're talking here, you know, within hours.
Profound risk. If it occurred within hours, as you have suggested it might, it would be profound indeed. I can't imagine many people living through that on the coast at all.
It's, you know, the civilization, you know, one of the things that there's a lot of books out now and articles about the end of the world. We saw a lot of it just before the millennium, where, you know, some prophecy was going to predict the end of civilization. I don't see the end of civilization at all. You know, I see us continuing on, and in fact, and emerging at an incredible new civilization. But there will be loss, and the loss will probably be great, as will the species on the planet be great. The loss of complete gene pools of species, both animal and flora, what will just go away.
But you do see the human race coming out the other side.
I do, and I see more of an agrarian society in the future. I see more communities, that are bonded together more towards the center in the United States. These would be more in the central portions of the states. You know, if we were to take a line and we were to say Arizona, for example, that area would be, let's just say, not the high altitudes of Arizona, like Prescott, for example, which is a mile high.
Mm-hmm.
That might be an island. And then moving eastward, you would then begin to see more communities. So they'd be scattered, but true communities. I mean, I've actually seen visions of what they look like and the kind of technology they have.
Gordon, this is consistent with your future map, is it not?
That has not changed in the 20 years since I released the first one, or 22 years now since I released my first one. I haven't seen any changes. I've seen some details that allowed me to be a little more specific, but it still remains the same. I've had literally hundreds, if not thousands, of visions relating to that. So that's where we will end up. And as your previous caller had said, sometime in our lifetimes.
So you think that it can be nailed down at least that, if not this summer, then within our lifetimes? What would suggest that to you? Why wouldn't you imagine that when you were plopped down as you were in this vision, that it wasn't 2300 summer up?
Well, when I've done, I did a series of shows on time travel for different projects and networks, and in combination with my own database of different visions I've had, the interesting thing always has been from the very beginning was that I would take, for example, even in a group, I would take groups of, my typical group now, I don't do that many seminars anymore, I just don't have the time or the energy anymore, but they typically are around 1,000 people or so, mm-hmm. and I'll take them all ahead in time, a decade at a time. So, we would start at 2000, and the next time we would look at it would be 2010, 2020.
Right.
And the interesting thing is that once I get up around 2012, I just don't see anything at all. I mean, it's like there's this quiet time period. There's nothing really going on, where if I was to look at 2004 or 2005, I would see all kinds of technical advances.
Kind of like you're hitting a wall?
Yeah, it's like time stopped at the end of 2012. And without me even expressing that to the audience, when we would go around the audience and we would ask maybe 20 different people to share their experiences, they would say that they would see a lot of things between 2000 and 2010. But they would then say from 2012, and they would get stuck there. And then they would move ahead to 2020, 30, 40, and then they would start seeing things again. So it was almost like there was this quiet time or this healing time.
Like a discontinuity. How bright is this now? We were talking earlier about the brighter the vision. You said this was really intense. That intense, huh?
The screens that I would have saw before, which showed some grays and some color but lessened, those things in January went away, and so the map has been pretty solid color for years. That has not changed. But when I when I'm above the earth looking back, I always see some kind of changes, looking for timelines, trying to determine a timeline, and it's almost as if in the continuum, if you will, that the event is locked in. It's kind of locked into a time period, and that time period of the full color fidelity showed me four events for the summer, and it was very specific for the summer, because when I saw this particular vision, I saw the new millennium, so it started at the new millennium where I saw the celebration, and I could see the fireworks, and so I clearly knew it was the new millennium. And then I watched the sun and the earth from space make a complete revolution and then make another half a revolution and stop. And so I determined that meant 1.5 years from the new millennium. And that was my timeline, which put me into the summer months of 2001.
Right.
And then I saw these four events that I assume are precursors to something larger, and that something larger, I can't say when that would occur. I don't know if it will occur this summer, or if these just set the stage so that everybody then says, my God, there is something going on now. If they haven't already been saying it with solar flares and everything else, this would do it.
Your book is Notes from the Cosmos.
And before you came on tonight, I got an email from Steve in Modesto, who says, Gordon has fascinated me ever since the first interview in late 97. While Earth changes have been the focus of many interviews, he did say, I thought you might find fascinating perspectives of his that I've discovered in reading Notes from the Cosmos, specifically three chapters relating to Mars, crop circles, and UFOs. And I don't think that we've ever talked about any of them, but I most particularly would love to talk to you about crop circles. We have really good evidence. Linda Moulton Howe, a reporter, went to England this last year, and she saw with her own very own eyes and videotaped the making of a crop circle, this light that came out, and then almost instant creation of this crop circle. So clearly, some of this crop circle stuff is absolutely legit. You have some thoughts on it?
I know Linda. We chatted years ago, not about crop circles, but about cattle mutilation.
Right.
And in my book on crop circles, and again, I wrote this in the first edition I wrote in 1988. And then I added to that and expanded it, brought it up to date, which is what we have today. And that was released in 97, 98. And the material kind of covers everything up to year 2012 of my visions. But it also includes other things that go along with these changes I'm seeing. And on crop circles, what I described, you know, over a decade ago, was that it was a stylus that was creating it. The stylus was like a red sphere the size of a basketball that would appear, and it would hover over these crops and move in rapid fashion, just like just a laser, but a ball. And wherever that ball passed, the wheat would depress themselves and spin in a fashion through a magnetic pulse of high intensity. And so a crop circle would take literally seconds to produce, and then the circle would leave.
What do you imagine the mechanism that produces this might be?
I believe, and what I state in my book, is that there are other levels of consciousness. We've come here at this time period of history that we are exploring the world of paranormal and ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had shows on that and guests
all the time.
And that's a very big subject, and we have national shows on that now, and mediums are appearing on talk shows, and so there's an interest, and that's just starting. That's going to explode.
It is exploding.
It's actually the new thing that I see expanding, and that's just one level of consciousness. Now there's other levels of consciousness that just different vibrations, but you know, we can't see ghosts, or some people can see them, most can't. But they operate in a different level of vibration.
What I'm noting is that more people are seeing them, Gordon. Many more people are seeing them, and other manifestations as well. It's all on the increase.
As the planet begins to change its pulse, all these charges are changing the Earth's actual resonant frequency, if you will. It's increasing, and as it increases, anything you do in the Earth flows through us. So when the Earth gets charged with a solar flare, you can rest assured that each of us is being affected in some fashion. We may have headaches, we may see visions, we may have electrical things. For me, I don't have to look in the sky. I can tell exactly when it's hitting because my legs literally just start quivering. I have to stand up because if I'm laying down, they'll just start jumping around. So I know I'm coupling that energy. Anyway, the other levels of consciousness is a level that I call the etheric, or Aetherians is a name that I gave it. So it's another level of consciousness where they're able to create in their world a manifestation that occurs in our world, which happens to be a form of magnetism, or a highly compressed magnetism. It's like an instrument from their realm to our realm. And these messages that they're sending are for us to grab our attention first, so that we realize that there's more than just ghosts out there. And if we study these symbols, it forces us to think. what it is. Now, the other flip side of that, of course, is there's the hoaxers. And there's a large number of those out there who are trying to replicate these things, which,
yes,
you know, causes confusion in many people. They say, oh, that's because one hoaxer did it, therefore none of it's valid.
Yes, but scientists are able to discern between the two. There are molecular changes in real crop circles that aren't there with the boards and chains. So they are able to discern the difference.
They are. But in the majority of the people, not your audience, who's already aware, or they wouldn't be listening to your show, the majority of the people aren't willing to accept it. And so it's a small...
Well, they're lost anyway, so
yeah,
we're not talking
about
it.
But it's increasing.
But,
I mean, we are seeing it increasing. Just as your listeners are increasing in numbers, stations are increasing.
Right.
It's because there is a thirst, as one of my subscribers wrote to me and said, he says, I have this thirst that I can never satisfy, and I just feel like there's so much more that I don't know.
Oh, yes. Are these crop circles, to rip off your book title, notes from the cosmos?
They are. They are messages. Some of them show the dynamics of where they are, mathematically trying to show where they come from. Some of them show, if you study them, you'll see that their positions in the heavens, the Earth's position to other bodies. And so it's based on a scientific, because, you know, when we think of consciousness or even ghosts, we think they're just like us except that they're dead. Well, there's other consciousnesses that don't understand language as we know it. Their language could be a language of mathematics or color, but not necessarily communications the way that we would expect it to be.
In any general sense, are you able to say whether you believe crop circles are instructional, warnings, simple scribblings, you know, like gang graffiti on a wall, or, you know...
Or what?
In that spectrum, yeah. What?
I see the Aetherians, the creators of the crop circles, as intelligences that, I guess the closest thing I could relate to it on Earth would be is if we had masters that came to the Earth and tried to teach us about compassion like the Buddha, or love like the Christ, or any other different masters that are on the Earth today, of which there are many, all trying to convey some message that would elevate humanity. The Aetherians are like that. They are masters, and so their messages are designed to make us aware of them, and therefore the goal for them is that there is no death, that consciousness is a stream, that we all continue on. We're living in a physical body this time. We may be in a physical body in our next incarnation, or we may not. We may be in the Aetherian realms or some other realms.
So
all designed to teach us about other levels of consciousness.
So then they're instructional.
Yes.
Well, so far, we're not doing really good at picking up the book and studying because we haven't quite deciphered them. Hold on. We're already at the top of the hour. Gordon, you good to go?
Yes, I'm good to go.
All right. Stay right there. Gordon Michael Scallion is my guest. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Good morning.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Myself believe it.
ride, you'll never go.
Wanna take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
We're getting a show in the heavens tonight, some of the heavens. This from Larry, a retired chief petty officer, not a cook, he says. Just getting home from work, could not miss the show in the sky. It was just fantastic. Blue to pink light. And the lights were coming in waves across the sky. I live 60 miles south of Yellowstone Park. Have a great view of the Tetons from my location to give you an idea of where I live. So, it's putting on a show for us tonight. Fairly synchronistic, wouldn't you say? Once again, here is Gordon Michael Scallion. And, Gordon, your book is available pretty much, I guess, worldwide, right?
It is. They can, most, you know, all the major booksellers have it. And if you can't find it in stock, you can get it through Amazon.com or through our website at matrixinstitute.com.
And we've got a link to Amazon.com where they right now for your book, where they discount everything to the point where I wonder how much longer they're going to be in business. They make it so cheap.
They're going to do well. I forecasted years ago that they were going to make it. The distribution would be a problem once they solved that. Amazon.com is going to do well, and they're good folks.
Yeah, they are.
And I recommend them people to get my book if they're online.
Well, they need to hang in there with what they're doing price-wise. It's a really good break for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then you also have a newsletter, right? And I want you to plug that. So,
I have a multi-newsletter called Intuitive Flash, and in it, I update three areas, economics, societal trends, and environmental trends. So it's research that I found into those areas that just doesn't appear some places or is confusing, and it also updates my forecasts. Those people who are you have an audience in Canada,
a big one, yes, all across Canada.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to be the keynote speaker on May 11th in Montreal at the 26th International Institute of Integral Human Sciences. And I'll be talking about consciousness and some of the subjects we talked about tonight, and I'll be personally autographing books there and also just answering questions for people. So I have a whole evening to do that, and that information you can get from my website at matrixinstitute.com.
I know you don't do that very often.
I try to support two organizations a year. I wish I could do more, doing this kind of work really takes a lot out of you, and if you don't learn to pace yourself, you remember what happened 2 or 3 years ago with me, and
sure.
I just used it too much and ended up for months at an end just in bed.
All right. I want to run two things by you that have been happening on my program, both of which I find, aside from the ghosts and so forth, that we've had increasing, I can't tell you how many, reports I've had of people seeing ghosts, but at the same time, somebody called up and said, you know, those things that I normally see in the corner of my eye, which I call shadow people, in peripheral vision, you see them moving. And then pretty soon, Gordon, I started getting thousands of emails, and I mean thousands, from people who said, not only do I see these beings, but I'm beginning to see them full on. In other words, not in peripheral vision, but absolutely full on. And I bet I had now certainly over 5,000 emails, major topic on my program, people seeing entities or something that they, and they've actually done drawings of these various shadow-looking people, creatures, slash whatever they are, I have no idea. Then also, concurrently with that, a lot of people calling lately, and this one's really puzzling me, saying, you know, Art, I've got some vague memories of history. It was a very different history. In other words, as an example, I remember that Mandela never made it out of jail, that Mandela was actually killed in jail. And he didn't go on to lead a nation, be free and lead a nation. Other people with countless other examples of things that almost would seem like they were straight out of some alternate timeline, or as though if there is time travel in our future, there are people coming back and changing things, which result in a changing of our memories, most of them. But it seems like a little something is leaking through. Both intriguing things to be getting so much email on all of a sudden. Kind of fits in?
Fits in. It's also what started for me. Because after I was in the hospital and started seeing visions, then what the next phase, which was like the next 6 months, I would, out of the corner of my eye, the peripheral vision of my eye, I would see things moving.
Really?
But I couldn't make out what they were. And it took years before I figured out what it was, and then was able to address it. And then in my seminars and workshops, people would come forward, and it's increased. You know, it's like what happens is that it's like the 100th monkey. A few people have an experience, and it triggers into the collective consciousness this energy level that says, okay, consciousness is now ready to take another little step, and then more people have that experience, and it builds in strength, and then eventually, in time, the masses get it. But it's a slow process, you know, taken in the past that would have taken centuries or millennium. However, things are moving so fast now that they literally occur in years or months. So out of the corner of your eye, what's going on there is that your inner vision, specifically, it's the pituitary gland, begins to secrete and become highly active. It's due to electrical charges that are being fed up the spinal fluid column to the base of the brain and then to that section.
Mm-hmm.
Once that pituitary starts triggering, it activates the pineal gland, which is the inner vision, and it also activates other portions of our brain, where the theory is that we only use a small portion of our brain, you know, 10% less, is not true. We're actually using a good portion of our brain, but the areas that we're using it in are not measurable the way that we would normally think it's measurable. And so what we're seeing out of the periphery of their eye is the opening up of our consciousness. Or it's like the prelude to a kundalini experience or the greater awakening. And then, dependent upon the individual, what their interest is in, what they may have read or whatever may have stimulated them, they begin to see those kinds of visions. And then, slowly but surely, if they're not terrified of it, which most are, they can move it from the periphery to the very center, where they're actually watching events out of time. Now, remember you mentioned earlier about the three visions I see. I see three screens.
Yes.
That's basically what happens. They tune into one of the alternate realities. There's an infinite number of alternate realities. In my particular case, I just see three. Other people may see, you know, more. And so they're looking at things. So they may see how something may have occurred, or they may look at the future and see a probable event. When events in the matrix get strong enough, then most people see a singular vision. So it is now growing, and I can clearly understand why you'd have 5,000 emails, and I'm sure in the future you're going to have that many more.
All right. I guess all right. In other words, this is going to increase exponentially toward this event that we've been discussing tonight.
Yes. And then after the event, let's say, you know, within the next decade, the event occurs, again, in most of our lifetimes, but let's just say within the next decade or by 2012, what happens at that time is that the actual pulse of the Earth, the magnetic field of the Earth that has been so low, will now come back, and it'll be incredibly strong. And it's the strong magnetic field that allowed the people who built the Great Pyramid to do so. They did it because they were able to access higher levels of consciousness and had technology back then to do that. Different than ours today, but they were able to do it because their brain power, if you will, was stronger. Ours will be stronger too. So we will be what I call children of the blue ray, which basically is a chapter of my book where I talk about what will the civilization be like. And what I see is that the color patterns of the earth are going to change somewhat, and that this new race of people will indeed be a telepathic race. So the people who are having the experience now that are listening to the show, write to you, they are the precursors. They're the few that begin the process that makes it possible later for the many to accept it. This is very scary to a lot of people. I've had people in my workshops who said, you know, I would really like to be able to see auras like you do. And I would say, okay, come up front. You know, there's 1,000 people here. And I said, let me show you how to do it. And I'll do an exercise. And when the instant they see it, they literally freak out. And literally, you know, leave. So there has to be a process of preparing for this. And that's why it's slow for most people out of the periphery of the eye.
Well, right now, the people saying these things in most circles, you know, are laughed at or made fun of or, oh, any number of derogatory sort of things, but not here. And I'm very serious about this. The number of that 5,000, that was on the shadow people alone. Now I'm getting all this timeline stuff. And these people are absolutely serious. Some of them breaking down in tears because they thought they were the only ones seeing these things or sensing these things, and now all of a sudden they know they're not. And so I get some very very literate, very important communications, thousands of them, and it means something to me, and it means something's going to happen. That's all I know. Is it possible, do you think, that timelines could have been tampered with, that some of the memories that these people have are because something has in fact changed? Is that one possible scenario?
It is a possible scenario from their perspective, which is the important one. It's what they are experiencing. If someone is living, or I call it interlacing, you're here physically in the world, but you feel detached from it. And from a psychological point of view, we would label that, and we would say that you're either schizophrenic, or you've got some issues, or you're an introvert. You know, we look for different terms to label how you are, but there's so many people who are interlacing with other realities, other time zones, and the reason that it happens to them is because they, you know, most people aren't, there's no really school of intuitive awakening yet. I mean, there's people who offer seminars, there's tapes, but it's not an accepted thing. It's not like you can go to a university and say, okay, here's the things that may be happening to you or will be happening to you, and this is how you prepare. So most people are kind of like on their own, unless they happen to find you and hear other people's experiences and learn from that. And your various, you know, visitors on your show who may share some insights about how it's happening. But it's very real for them. They're seeing it. As far as it being changed, I've experienced what I would call sub-levels of consciousness. They're kind of like thought forms, where you have a lot of people thinking a certain thing,
right,
and it becomes real in consciousness. And so people tune into that, and they all start to see this particular event that never gets enough strength to become a reality. It's building, but it's not strong enough to happen. And then when the timeline hits it, it collapses. And all of a sudden, it looks like something's changed. Now, are there beings that are changing individual timelines? I think it's possible, depending on what they're tuning into. That's why you have to be careful of what you're doing.
Speaking of being careful of what you're doing, it was a couple of years ago, I tried 7 really big experiments, Gordon. Probably too much to an egotistical thing to have tried, but There was a drought in Texas. There was drought in Florida in the Northwest. There were problems in Canada. I actually enjoined my audience to try and conduct a mass concentration to bring rain. These were in terrible drought areas. Unaccountably, every single time, all the times we tried it, Gordon, rain came as if from nowhere. In fact, in one case, to such a degree that there were terrible floods. And it scared me a little because I didn't understand it. I don't understand the mechanism of it. I don't even understand if it's really true. But I saw it happen. My audience saw it happen. Those who participated saw it happen. And that's all I've got to say about it. And I guess the reason I bring that up is to ask if some of these events that lie ahead in our timeline could be manipulated.
There is always the outcome of reality is a direct relationship to the collective consciousness. In other words, each of us and our thoughts, our actions, whether we are consciously aware of our thoughts or actions, all couples into this great computer in the sky, this collective universal mind. And whatever that charge is what becomes the reality. And when we're ready to accept new principles, new ideals, it's because the consciousness is charged it. Now, along the way, your experiment, I did something similar back in the early 80s, and with groups of people, targeted groups of people, doing prayer and meditation for events.
Right.
And what I discovered is that we indeed can make changes in selective areas, but there is a price to pay for that. In essence, what we're saying is our hearts and our compassion is that we want to make things better for people.
Mm-hmm.
And so our intent is good. We may have our ego in there to some extent feeling power, that we want to realize that we have the power to participate in this. But the other side of it is, by playing mini gods,
mm-hmm.
what we're doing, is what else are we altering?
Yeah, it scared me. It really scared me. And I said, who am I to be doing this? And there was a bad hurricane headed for the East Coast, and people were emailing me by the thousands saying, let's do another grand experiment. Let's head it away from... Well, you know, I thought, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. And for all I know, I might hold a hurricane offshore long enough for it to build, you know, to God knows what, something really awful, and make a mistake. I'm no God. And so I stopped doing it, and I've been thinking about it ever since. But when it comes to the kind of changes that you're talking about, it begins to get tempting if there's something to it all.
It's, you know, again, it would not take a large percentage of people, of this planet, to alter certain outcomes, because we're, in essence, what we're doing with our thoughts is we're modifying the elements, earth, air, wind, and fire. We're attempting to put those into balance. But we have to remember that nature itself is a consciousness. And it always seeks balance and harmony. And we're the wild card. You know, we came in and we started to modify
mm-hmm.
nature. And we've done it with nuclear explosions underground, above ground. We've done it with secret technology of a certain, you know, electromagnetic waves and other kinds of waves that we probably don't understand because it's secret. We've done it with chemicals in the soil, in the rivers, in the oceans.
You know about HAARP, right?
Of course.
So, yes, we're doing all kinds of manipulation. Mankind has got his hands all over the place.
And those things, we're not at that place where we are true partners with nature to do these kind of things. If we were at that place, each of us would be conducting our life in such a fashion as we would not violate nature. We would participate in those things.
I'm with you all the way. Hold on, Gordon. So that's why I stopped doing it. Now, if Gordon's vision does come true, then hopefully all we can wish for you is it's gentle.
Ain't it good? Ain't it right? That you are with me here tonight.
music playing, our bodies swaying in time. Touching you, so warm and tender. Lord, I feel such a sweet surrender. Beautiful as a dream that makes me.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
So, it may be an interesting summer, huh? Summer in the city. Might not be where you want to be. Good morning. Gordon Michael Scallion is my guest. We are talking of many things. Most importantly, his vision for what may be coming this summer, but many other things as well. Included in that list is Mars. In a moment. Once again, back with Gordon Michael Scallion, and actually, just before going back to him, his book is Notes from the Cosmos, A Futurist's Insights into the World of Dream Prophecy and Intuition. You're welcome to go through my website. What would be the right word? Traverse, I guess, our website. Under tonight's guest, and you'll see the book there, and you can just go and buy it if you wish at Amazon. But he's also got a newsletter, and I think there's a phone number. We talked about the newsletter rather extensively, but forgot to give out the phone number, I think. So, I think there's a phone number to order the newsletter that you put out, right?
Yes. They can, between 9 and 5 Eastern Standard Time, Monday through Friday, they can call 603-363-4164.
That's between 9 and 5 Eastern, 603-363-4164, and they can order the newsletter there.
They can order the newsletter, or they can get a trial subscription if they want to kind of try it out for a few months.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good deal, a trial, huh? All right, there you are, folks. Don't lose that number, 603-363-4164 now. There's been, for a long time now, a really interesting controversy going on with respect to Mars. And scientists have thought, no, there could not possibly be life on Mars. Just couldn't possibly be. However, Sir Arthur C. Clarke of recent days has been coming out and saying pretty incredible things based on some new things that he's seen on Mars. This big glass worm he's been pointing to, and some other things that have led him to say he believes there is large life on Mars. From Clarke, that's really an incredible statement to make. Now, he didn't say whether he believes they're there now or were once there. All he says is large life on Mars. That's really something from Clarke. And indeed, some of the artifacts we're beginning to see now on Mars are really, really curious. And I've never talked with you about Mars at all, as far as I recall, but I'd like to. What have you seen about Mars?
Mars was important enough that I included a whole chapter on it in my book.
Right.
It was based on a series of altered state transcripts that I brought through in May of 86. May of 86, I brought it through. That was the first time that I got great details of it. And it happened quite by accident. At that time, we were able to do these sessions almost on a weekly basis. And we were exploring the subject of life in our solar system. That was the subject. And the response that came back from a higher state of consciousness that I was in was that in the physical form of any life that we might understand in this solar system, that there was none. That there had been. And that triggered the conductor at that time, who was my wife, Cynthia, to immediately change all of her questions that she had prepared in a highly different area that she was going in, and she just put those aside and felt it was really important. Her intuition was saying, follow this up.
Yes.
And she says, be specific about Mars. And the response that came back was that that at one time, before humankind was on Earth, there was two thriving civilizations on Mars. One was an aquatic life form that were more reptilian, if you will, and the other was more of a humanoid form, but we would say they would be giants, 9 feet, 11 feet tall. And the aquatic people were kind of a hybrid between those people. So it's like two levels emerge. Just on our planet here, we might say we had, whales and cetaceans, were here before us, and then we came in, so we had different life forms. So there was basically two that was on Mars, two dominant, what we would call intelligences, consciousnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And they had developed a society, a very sophisticated society, and to the point where their technology allowed them to actually go out and transverse the stars, and
wow.
They had literally visited the Earth and other places. So this was this, so now it's like Arthur C. Clarke. I mean, this is like a science fiction novel when I'm reading the transcript, because I don't remember in the deep state of consciousness, I don't remember what I'm saying, but I'm reading the thing and I'm saying this, there's no way this can be possible. And at that time, there were other consciousnesses from other sun systems that were coming into our solar system. And so as time goes, we're talking in excess of 5 billion years here, that their evolution began. And then the other consciousness that they came in was more of a threatening. It would be kind of like watching a sci-fi movie and seeing raiders coming in. They had built great temples, pyramid shapes, three-sided and four-sided pyramids. They had great conduits that connected the cities, which were like tubes that were on the surface,
right?
And tubes that were under the surface that connected everybody back and forth. So it was an integrated kind of a community, rather than having rural and cities. It was like cities, all interconnected like a hub. And they also, to protect the planet, they created a network of devices that would literally keep people away, kind of like a Tesla ray, if I understand my own transcript. It sounds like that anyways. Anyway, something went awry with it, and it literally backfired and destroyed the total surface of Mars for decades of the Martian year. It would just, the mechanism just kept destroying everything and just pulverized. It literally ripped away the atmosphere. And then the transcript went on to end in saying that, this is again in 86, it said, what will be found is that there will be found that there is ice and water still contained, and there will be found remnants of at least two of the pyramidal structures in one of the tubes, and that would be discovered before the new millennium began.
Huh.
And so,
have you seen the photographs in question, for example, of what's being called the glass tube? Have you seen that?
No.
Oh my! You've really got to see those photographs. I've seen.
Are they on your site?
I think they are. If they're not,
we should get them. Huh?
We can get them right away.
Yeah.
Keith, would you please put up the the glass tube. It's an incredible photograph. We've seen the pyramids on Mars, pyramidal-shaped things, and, you know, a lot of people who are experts in this field, Richard C. Hoagland, who's taken a lot of Mars pictures and said, "Wow, look at that!" A lot of times, Gordon, I just go, "Sorry, you know, I see rocks. I don't see the same pattern you do." But he brought this photograph forth, the same one Arthur C. Clarke has been talking about. And I went, "Oh my God, there's no question about the fact that something built this. It's not natural. There's no way this is natural." I'll see if Keith can get it up there. Oh, please, Keith. I mean, there's no question about it. You just look at it and you go, "Oh my God." So that would fit right in, wouldn't it, with what you're talking about?
Well, at least from the point of view of the tubes, I know that there's been a speculation about the pyramid or the face of Mars, which I did not receive any information at all about that. The only thing I received on that was that there were two parts of a pyramid that would be found, but destroyed, like the tops have been blown away, but you would still see, clearly be able to see the shapes of them, and that by the new millennium that this would be, you know, known. So, you know, as far as I know, that prediction is not a hit because there's no scientific proof that there are pyramids or tubes, but it looks like maybe we're getting some information now that might support that.
Oh, incredible information, no question about it. So then, do you think that, I guess you don't. I was about to ask whether you think we'll get back to Mars, but apparently not until some pretty serious changes have occurred.
You know, we don't know the timeline of the reality of a pole shift. With all my heart, I believe it will happen in our lifetimes and probably within, you know, the next decade. But we may very well get there. I mean, even if we had some severe events, like I see this summer, for both this country and Japan and South America, those are the three that I see experiencing some really devastating events, it still would not probably stop the programs that are underway. I know NASA's working on, they've upgraded from cheaper and faster to safer and perhaps better. But I sense the next breakthrough that we're going to see is photographic. One of my predictions is that for either this year or next year, that something equivalent to what the Hubble has been seeing out in space, we're going to be able to look at with ground-based technology. We're going to be able to look at surfaces on planets. And if that prophecy comes true, then we'll be able to see a lot more. So we, you know, as the technology comes, I mean, the technology we're using to get to Mars now is old technology. It's really old. The newest technology, as we all know, is in the hands of black ops. You know, it's stuff that's flying in the air that we think are other things.
Well, that's a whole other topic. UFOs. I was instructed this time to ask you about UFOs.
Sure. That's a show into itself.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Are these many things, Gordon? Are they extraterrestrial life? Are they terrestrial life? Are they dimensional life? Or are they a mixture?
I think that there are so many levels of consciousness that the ones that I think we need to focus on first is the physical reality ones, the ones that we can see, touch, and feel.
That's right.
And
the ones that have been colliding with airliners in Mexico City and things,
you know,
like that.
The photographic evidence is overwhelming. And technology, especially with video cameras, has allowed imagery. You know, there isn't a day that goes by probably where I don't get a tape in the mail of some incredible footage. So just looking at the visual evidence, realizing that a portion of it is going to be hoaxed if somebody wants to spend the time and money to do it. I'm not sure why they would want to, but you know, it's like the crop circles. There's a portion of it that isn't real, but there are. So the physical stuff back, and I do cover a chapter of that in my book as well, but there are, and there has always been, visitors to our planet. We're at the stage now where we're starting to explore going out of our system. So it's not hard if I was to say in 100 years from now that we're going to go out to the stars and visit other planets. Most people would say that's probably could be because look at how far we've gone in the past 50 years. And maybe it would only be 10 years or 20 years that we do that. But we can accept that. It's the hard part for most people is to accept that there are other life forms. Yet we're starting to get ready to accept that. If we look back, let's say 25 or 30 years ago, during the Kennedy era, for example,
sure.
And we asked what percentage of the population believes in the possibility of UFOs, it was relatively small. That number now is high. It's the majority, more than...
Oh, it's very high, yeah. Oh, it's very high.
Yeah, and so the question now is where are they from? Why are they here? Are there good guys and bad guys? You know, those are the questions. And I believe all of those things are true. I believe that there are positive and negative, as well as there are beings who have been kind of like caretakers, you know. And I personally have never seen a UFO. I have had experiences that
uh-huh.
I can't explain.
Uh-huh. I actually have seen one, so.
and many people have. So it's from my perspective, it's very real, and it's like sorting out all of the various possibilities, and I believe that they all exist. And there's another portion here which we have to include in that, is that a lot of the things that are flying in the skies may very well be earthbound craft. It may be the next evolution after the stealth, maybe the Aurora or even the Project
sure.
Past Aurora.
Oh, imagine how many generations they're ahead out there near me.
50 years ahead is my take on it. Technologically, they're 50 years ahead of where we are now.
Backtracking for just a second to Mars, if there was life as long, say, as 5 billion years ago on Mars, why is it unreasonable to assume that in some final gesture or some fan gesture, who knows, the Martians seeded life on Earth?
In the chapter of Notes from the Cosmos, it talks about that near the end, when the destruction was going on, when the technology was devastating the planet, that some of them, the aquatic caste, as it will, caste was a caste system, but the aquatics were almost immediately wiped out. But the others, the giant-like creatures, many of them were able to get away, to escape. And a portion of those came to Earth, and we know them in myth now as the giants, or the cyclops.
Mm-hmm.
And so a portion of them came here. But the Earth is really a collection of species. Each of the, you know, we have a spiritual beings now. The humankind is a spiritual being. But it was created out of various life forms that were present on Earth, taking the best of each of those, whatever the temperature of the Earth and whatever the climate was like at the time. Like any species, humankind adapted. And so the giant creatures, just as many of the dinosaurs, didn't make it, but they were able to adjust and become part of the consciousness of the Earth, which means that they became part of the reincarnational process. So the shocking part here is that in some of us, we may have Martian origins from our soul's perspective.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess there would have been a lot of souls involved, huh? Even 5 billion years ago. Never thought of it that way, but that's just certainly one way to think about it. Listen, we are coming up on the top of the hour, and I know where you are. It's almost 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
And so I always give it is a break time where a lot of people on the East Coast need to get to sleep. And so I'm asking you that question now, coming up on the...
I certainly do.
You certainly need to get sleep, all right?
I do.
I understand that absolutely. You've given us, believe me, more than enough to think about with your latest vision. And if you have any others, that important. If this is going to occur, Gordon, just very quickly, is it probable that you will have another vision indicating we're almost right on top of it? Will we get a little warning?
I'm hopeful we will. What I'm tracking carefully is these four events that I see for the summer, and I will update those, and I will send Keith an update as well.
So if it's a bad summer,
anybody can go to my website or go to your website.
Right.
And if there's something that's important, it'll be there for everybody.
All right. Bless your heart, my friend, as always. Thank you.
You bet. My pleasure.
Right. This one's for you. See you later, Gordon.
Bye-bye.
Summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirty and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match here. But tonight is a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night. If I think it'll be alright, and babe, don't you know it's a pity for days? Can't you like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city? Cool town, meeting in the city, dressed so fine and looking so pretty. Cool cats looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city.